This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. Just a simple reminder, if there's something that you are looking to do this weekend, there is an incredible list of activities, many of which are actually free, a bunch of different festivals, fairs. You can go to New Orleans and Company's website. You can get that whole list and gain a better understanding of all of the offerings throughout the metropolitan area that we have going on weekend, and there are quite a few. And I know a lot of folks are going to be looking for something to do on Sunday because, you know, there's no Saints game. It's a Monday night game. So you're free to do whatever. And the Pelicans play their first game at like 12:30, I believe, at the Smoothie King Center on Monday as well. So really not other than college and high school, not any professional sports this weekend. So you may be looking for something to do. We have a great lineup. We're going to visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll talk about a number of things, the DOJ's joint motion to begin the sustainment period relative to the NOPD and the consent decree and what that means. We'll also talk about the indictment of Randy Farrell and the implications of the mayor. The U.S. Marshals Service, their task force, recent stats. I talked briefly about an operation that they had yesterday, thanked them for their work. Incredible work, quite frankly. At 11:30, we'll visit with Don Dubuque, host of Bayou Wild TV and The Outdoors with Don Dubuque. He's got another season coming up, and we'll talk about what is headed our way. We'll visit with the Chancellor of Delgado, Larissa Littleton Stibe, as well as Jennifer Fernandez, the Dean of Charity School of Nursing. And we'll discuss all of the opportunities that the School of Nursing at Delgado offers. And they are quite a few. And we'll also discuss salaries. And we'll discuss availability. And there are a lot of openings now, and there are more openings that are projected over the coming years. And we'll talk about that as folks make their decisions about what vocation, how they want to be employed, what opportunities are out there. Quite a few at Delgado. And they're very nimble. And that's what I love about what they do, is they craft. You know, from my period of time, it's almost fair to say exotic schedules, because they would have never in a million years thought about doing what Delgado is doing today when I was in college back in the 70s. No way, no how. I mean, it was the way that they did it was the way that they did it, and it wasn't going to change. Well, times have changed. So it's going to be interesting conversation with the Chancellor of Delgado Community College, Larissa Littleton Stibe. Folks, we talked about this a little bit the other day with Guy Williams. There's been a lot of discussion about the strike that the ILA is on. There's been some discussion about whether or not the president's going to step in. We'll talk more about that in a moment. The impact on the economy. But not a lot of discussion about what got us here and where we are at the present time. But I did want to start with this. I don't know about you, but I don't really like, and I don't think it's a good starting point, when the head of the union conducts himself like a thug and he starts issuing threats out there that it's not only to the companies representing the shipping companies and the ports, but really to you and I as citizens, taxpaying citizens, consumers in this country. Because he says, you know, and he grabs his neck like in a choking gesture during an interview, and this goes back almost 30 days now. If they're going to be like this, he says, I'll cripple you. I'll cripple you, and you have no idea What that means, nobody does. Well, I know what it means. And if you don't know what it means, I'll tell you what it means. It means that he is going to reach into every consumer's pocket and take money away from you. Because the longer they're out on strike, the harder it is for us to get critical goods, pharmaceuticals, and the like, and we'll pay more. Because the supply chain is going to be strained, supply is going to go down, demand's going to remain the same. And we know the principles of capitalism and how all this works. Prices go up. So that's the starting point of the union. Very thug-like. If you don't give us and succumb to our demands, I am going to cripple you. And I can't imagine that many people out there really believe that that's a sound approach. It's really ironic. I mean, a lot of Democrats have been very critical of Donald Trump and some of the stuff that he says that they claim is thug-like and is very dictatorial and autocratic. Well, this is emblematic of the same thing, but our president is embracing this guy. Why? Well, we all know why. There's a plus side for them, right? They're big supporters of Joe Biden. They'll accept that threat to the entire economy and community of U.S. citizens and others living in this country that are going to pay the price. Because he's going to cripple us. And that's where we start. Going back to what I said before, that's not a good start for me. Because my first response would be, really? You think? But again, it depends on you and I. On whether or not we're willing to accept this thug-like mentality to negotiations, all the while knowing that the folks that are going to suffer the most are not them, not the shipping companies, not the ports, but the consumers. We're going to pay the biggest price of anyone as it relates to this thug-like mentality by this guy Daggett. Now, he may think it's cute. He may think that it's going to yield benefits for him. I'm told that he's, you know, working on a legacy because he wants his son to take his place, and it's very important that he deliver upon this demand. Well, that's great. That's selfishness. That's what I call that. That's not a credible leader to start out with threats. I thought that conduct of unions went by the wayside 30 years ago, 40 years ago, but obviously not. We're back. We're back to issuing threats. And then the Biden-Harris administration, as spineless as they are standing up for them. And they're willing to embrace them when they threaten our economy and everybody that lives in this country. And all the while, we're talking about Donald Trump and his conduct. But we'll embrace this conduct. And in fact, we'll go so far as to reach out to those representing the ports and the shipping companies and others and say, you know, you really need to offer a strong and fair contract that reflects workers' contribution to the economy. And we've had others like Julie Sue and others encouraging the groups, she is the labor secretary, encouraging the groups to return to the bargaining table and reach a fair contract. She goes on to say, port workers' sacrifices and importance during the pandemic and in helping communities recover from Hurricane Helene weren't fairly reflected in their salaries. Now, these people are so disconnected from reality, it's nauseating. It is absolutely nauseating. You want to talk about what people do and the sacrifices and the importance that they make for communities during disasters? Don't talk about the dock workers, right? Talk about first responders. First responders' salaries do not go up in the aftermath of a disaster. They don't get the benefit of staying home or working from home or going on reduced hours as so many others did. And I mean, this is a slap in the face to every first responder out there. And we better wake up. They are going to talk about their sacrifices. They work in a bubble. They interact with one another, not with anyone else. You make a sacrifice when you're putting yourself at risk. And I don't hear Miss Sue out there in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. And I'm waiting with bated breath to hear her say that the first responder community should be rewarded with salary increases because of the sacrifices that they've made. These people are so disconnected, they have no idea. What's also very interesting is they want to share in the record profits, but when there are losses and when the economy's down, they don't want to share in the losses. It's a little ripe for me that when things are going well, folks are able to pay their shareholders, maybe put money aside, rainy day fund, they have the risk, insurance costs going up, weather patterns are changing, ships are losing containers in the ocean on a daily basis. There are a lot of things going on, a lot of things that have to be managed. And then you look at the activity of what's happening on a port. And I don't mean to minimize this, but I mean, we have to put things in its proper perspective. Maybe we should do a deep dive into the internal operations of the ILA and actually how they manage their workforce before we give anything up. Because it may yield some very interesting results. We've been trying to hold on to kind of a 30s model, right? I mean, everything used to be tagged manually that came into the port. You know, we'd fill out tags and attach it to whatever. You know, they fought and everything was labeled. They actually fought barcoding using scanners, utilizing automation. Why? Because they knew that it wasn't as labor intensive. Maybe we should break up these contracts into a difference between the handling of containers as opposed to handling a break bulk. And talking about separating these issues and negotiating these activities separately. Because one's definitely more labor intensive than the other. One has a higher risk than the other. All the while, people would say, "What, Newell, what is the motivation to do that?" Well, think about it, folks. For you to keep more money in your wallet. Wouldn't it be nice if there was somebody actually looking out for the consumer for once? For just once? When we have this spineless president sitting there saying, "Oh, no, no, I believe in the collective bargaining. It doesn't matter to me how much the consumer gets screwed. I'm willing to sacrifice for these 45,000 to 54,000 employees over the rest of the country. Really? How about everybody else that's not represented by a union? How about everybody else that's out there making sacrifices far greater than the ILA? Are you representing them too? Of course not. Because they don't vote in a block. And the fact that we would leverage this walkout at this point in time, in the advent of an election, I think it's going to end up blowing up in their face because of the thug-like mentality and the approach that they're going to cripple us. Actions speak louder than words. The only person that has moved in these negotiations at this point in time are the ports and the shipping companies. There was some overtures made that the union would be willing to accept a 61.5% salary increase over the next 6 years. The companies offered 50%, and that's been rejected. And they've decided to hold out for a 77% increase. And even more important than that, no new automation. You know what automation does for you folks? Well, let me connect the dot for you. It creates efficiencies. And it becomes cheaper. And it will be reflected in price. Because small businesses and alike that pay less to get their goods here into this country to put on the shelves and provide the services that they provide for you each and every day, their cost structure is reduced. Then the juices of competition flow in a much less impeded way. And who is ultimately the beneficiary of that? You, the consumer. They're worried about holding on to positions of an old labor model that was so heavily human capital, relying on human capital. And as times have changed and automation has come in, they have been fighting that tooth and nail every time. And then we have folks that are working as longshoremen that don't work every day because there's not enough work out at the dock. And they were trying to raise a base rate for individuals so that they actually make more for working 2 or 3 days a week. And one has to ask the question, especially of the newer folks that are working in the longshoreman business, why would you hang around if you don't get stable 5 days a week? I don't know about you, but I'd love to know the answer to that question. How does that work in the best interest of your family? The uncertainty that you're not going to get it. The union operates itself on a seniority system. Those that have 25 years, they're going to work every day, and they're going to get overtime. Sound fair to you? It's interesting, because they want us to finance this inefficient staffing model that they've engaged in for years. Now, why would somebody want to work out there if they're not guaranteed 40 hours a week? There has to be a reason. Let me guess. Could it be the benefits? Could it be knowing that maybe one day they reach that threshold number of years where they get the gratis and then they're good as gold, so they're willing to take it in the shorts here? In the short term, because in the long term, it's going to pay back. I'd like to know the answers to these questions. I'd like to know what motivates people to stay involved in a union that can't guarantee a 40-hour work week. They're guaranteeing something. And at the same time, complain that they're not able to support their family. Now, whose fault is that? Should we, as citizens of this country, suffer the consequences of an inefficient staffing model that's been put up by the ILA? I don't know about you, but I say hell no. We'll be right back. Love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Got a lot of texts here talking about how U.S. ports are at the bottom of the list for automation. That's true. You can guess why. People are starting to connect the dots. I dropped out of my company's union several years ago because I was tired of them taking $25 every 2 weeks and hardly receiving any benefits or raises in return. They are the epitome of greed. Let's go to James. James, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Where do we start, Noah? You've asked a lot.
I don't know,
James.
let me
with one of the assumptions I think you made. You made the assumption that we need to look into the unions in depth. That tells me your point of view.
I said we need to look into the staffing model of the ILA in depth to gain a better understanding of what it is that they're talking about and why there should be a desire to pay more money and give basically a 12.5% every year increase for the next 6 years.
Perfect. Why not look at both sides? Why are we just looking at the union side?
Well, because the union has engaged in a collective bargaining agreement, and now they are on strike. And now, because of the labor laws in this country, the operators have no choices but to come to the table. They put a 50% increase on the table, and the union hasn't moved at all.
Well, I think you're missing my question, but I'll leave that one alone. My point is, bargaining goes both ways. The other side of this is...
Yeah, but you're advocating for a socialistic model that employees...
No, I didn't say what I was advocating for. I didn't say what I was advocating for.
You were implying that because of the profits that are made, that we should look at these companies.
I'm trying to get to a point, and you're putting words in my mouth.
Okay, all right, sorry.
Don't do it.
Go ahead, James. Go ahead.
I'm going to say what I'm trying to say. Unions are not perfect. I've been a member of a union for 20-some-odd years, and I got screwed, but I still believe in collective bargaining. That people are people. And anytime you have people involved, you're going to have some things wrong, period. But what's going on today is my complaint is the way people are looking at this. A guy named Milton Friedman said unions do not cause inflation. There's some causes of inflation and some other things. People looking at unions with a bad eye. But here's my basic point. This bargaining goes both ways. And the assumption is that automation is going to happen. Negotiate it. You do like most conservatives say, let the market fall where the market fall. If these people are more valuable today than they're going to be in 5 or 6 or 10 years, they ought to be able to ask for some transition period, training period, or some type of transition to different jobs. But to vilify them because they want to take care of their families, I think is wrong. That's my point.
So what is their value, right? I mean, when we went to containerizations, obviously we're not touching product as much as we used to, right? In the break bulk area, they're still touching product. The risk for them has been minimized as a result of automation. And basically what they are fighting is that there is a desire to be competitive because we're competitive. We're competing in international markets. And you go to other ports and they're able to take a container off a ship and bring it right to rail and stick it on rail and not ever have it touch the dock.
Okay. Can I make a comment?
And because what that does is every time it touches the dock or there's a touch point or what I refer to as a whip, a work in process, there are risks. And the more risk and hurdles that you can remove in any organization, in just a second, it's my turn now.
Oh, okay.
It is my show.
I didn't know if I said that. I'm sorry.
You minimize risk and you decrease costs. And it's hard, really hard in my view, to criticize a company for having a desire to do so, especially when in all the other markets, they're doing it. And here, one of the negotiating items is that no more automation. What? Are you kidding me? So you want to keep us in the Stone Age and never automate, never improve, never get to cost containment measures when the entire world is on a just-in-time system. It's called JIT. The Japanese developed it many, many decades ago. In fact, one of my papers that I wrote in college was on the JIT system because it was just so intriguing to me how the Japanese was so much better at inventory management than we ever were in the U.S., and it was all because of JIT, just in time. And so when you order something, right, because people aren't really stocking anymore because there's a heavy cost to do so, they rely on a supply chain model that can be as efficient as possible. My rub is that we will allow 50,000 workers to stand in the middle of that and basically compel no progress into the foreseeable future. I don't think that's smart, not by any stretch of the imagination. And I think it thwarts progress and economic improvement for this country in a huge way, and we should not allow it. The same way that we wouldn't allow police and fire to go together and just go on a massive nationwide strike. Because of the utility of what it means to the safety and security of this country, we don't allow it. We shouldn't allow these people to do this either. And the president should step in. And that's why I call him spineless. Because he knows that if this goes 30 or 60 days, we are in trouble. We are in big trouble.
Oh,
go ahead.
Goodness.
Go ahead.
There's a lot of assumptions here that are wrong. First of all,
really?
I defy anybody listening.
I've read everything that economists have been saying, that economists on both sides of the aisle have been saying for the last 3 days, and they all agree on that. If it goes 60 days, we're in trouble.
And that's part of growing. Let me say this, and let's see if I can make this short. I'm a Trump. Democracy is messy. So is capital. Hold on. I'll let you speak. Please let me.
So is I just capitalism. Agreed. I said, yes, it is.
And some part of making this work hurts. You can't have growth without some pain sometimes. Now, I made an assumption, and I hope I wasn't wrong. Automation's coming. That I believe. Automation ain't always great. So I'm going to challenge all you listeners to go up to somewhere that's totally automated, where at a store somewhere, and ask the clerk to make change because you made a mistake, even if it's only 64 cents. Generally, because of automation, these people haven't practiced math, and they probably don't know how to fix it. And because of automation, they are not allowed to change anything on that cash register. So everything about automation ain't great. But I anticipate this is going to be, for the short term, better for the consumer. I agree with you on that. Here's why I disagree, is that because of the timing, these people are taking advantage of the timing because they know their jobs are going to be obsolete. They're looking for a transition. And I don't begrudge them that, period, because
they're not looking for a transition. That's what I believe. That, James, I'm going to stop you there because that's a bald-faced lie. They're not looking for a transition. They're looking for a disruption by saying no automation and that all of our workers, as they stand today, would be grandfathered in, and that's going to be part of every contract moving forward in the future. It is a ridiculous, ridiculous negotiating point. And the companies, I hope they don't negotiate that in, because that will be disastrous. And other ports around the world will just continue to grow and grow and grow. And the only thing about the U.S., thankfully, is that the size and the impact of the U.S. is so strong that in the short term we'll overcome this, but we'll continue to be behind the rest of the world in the ease and the convenience of receiving goods and services that we order. And if everybody in this country is happy with that for the sake of 45 to 54,000 employees, then I'll be wrong. I just don't think they will. I think when they press the button to order something, they like that it shows up in a day or two. They're not going to like if it shows up in 2 months. Could be wrong, but I don't think so. We'll be back. Stay with us, folks. And, you know, I guess I have to bring this up as well. The president just yesterday said that, you know, we need to get back to the negotiating table. And, you know, we were able to compel folks to get back together on the West Coast deal of the longshoremen. Now, what's interesting here is one would think that that's the perfect opportunity, right, for this president to step in and say, hey, guys, why don't we just mimic the West Coast deal? Because what they're asking for with the Gulf Coast, East Coast deal is greater than what was given in the West Coast deal. And if my memory serves me correct, I think I'm almost positive on this, automation was not part of that deal. Right? This is called stair-stepping in many respects, you know. They're going to get a deal. This East Coast, Gulf Coast deal will be greater than that deal. Then the West Coast is going to come back and want, you know, at least that deal and probably ask for more. And then we continue going back and forth. Does anybody believe that's a great strategy for you as the consumer? I don't. If I were the president, I'd have him sitting at the table with me sitting there and negotiating and trying to encourage folks to come to the terms and conditions of that other deal. At the very least. So my country wouldn't have to suffer. And that automation is never, ever, ever going to be off the table. We wouldn't be where we are today had we stymied or stifled automation 40 years ago. Think about that for a moment and how your life has changed. And how things are so much easier in many respects today. Let's go to Chuck. Chuck, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning, Noel. I rarely call the show, but I was compelled to call today. I would say this regarding the statement that you just made. I understand as it relates to production, we wouldn't necessarily be in a certain place, but without automation. But however, I would say this. The manufacturing jobs and the people being able to go to work would be different. I would say that. I watched a trash collection where you got a driver and just the automated arms that come out and pick up the trash cans. And I thought, you know, because there are levels and tiers to even human beings, right? You have people who come out of incarceration or people as simple as different levels, variations of levels of life in terms of where you are. And my point is like, so where do those people work? So if automation at some point comes where everything is fully automated, I'm simply saying and you use the word socialism, or actually, is he a socialist? Socialism is a thing, is not necessarily a dirty word. You know, capitalism is something that just in its nature can, I'm not saying it does, but it can breed greed. And unfortunately, the human nature wants to simply take more than it ever gives. And so that selfishness comes to a place to where there's no give and take. There's no balance across the board to make sure that everyone will have enough. The greed, the profits, they every year, it's about just pushing profits more than the last year and not saying, well, we're really good. Let's look at how we're taking care of everyone else. That's how you balance a society.
Chuck, but let me ask you a question. You have a 401k?
No, I don't. I'm self-employed.
Do you invest in anything for your retirement?
Yes. I try
and,
to.
And
now,
when you look at your statement every month, you want the most profit that you can possibly had, the most interest on your investment to be as great as possible, right?
Look, I mean, but you're speaking that in certain ways in a vacuum because I'm also someone.
No, Chuck, it's an ideology. The question, Chuck, is at how much are you willing to give up? I mean, if you could get a 17% return on your money, but they told you, Chuck, for the greater good, you should only take 9. You're going to take 9?
If it's the greater good, and who would tell
no,
me?
No, Chuck, it's simple. It's a yes or no answer.
It's not a yes or no.
Certainly it is. In this scenario that I'm giving you, this example that I'm giving you, will you take 9?
Life is not just black and white. It's not just yes and no all the time. And that's no, because that's what people want to hear, or that's what people figure it is. And that's unfortunately how we got here. So when Jesus
demonize everybody out there that's in corporate America, small business and everything else, because they want to make the greatest amount of profit that they can make. And yet, when we look at our own personal finances, every time I ask somebody, if they give you a number, theoretically, that this is the number you should get, and anything over and above that for you, you should give back to society at large. I have yet to have someone say they're willing to take 9 as opposed to 17. Unless they're motivated by what? A tax deduction. So you're getting something in return. Again, one of those other nasty capitalistic characteristics. We are hypocrites, every single last one of us, myself included. When it comes and looking out for our best interests, we want the most that we can get and we can grab, plain and simple. And I've not seen a lot of people that approach life any differently, nor should they, because they're trying to leave a better life for their kids, their family, or whatever motivates them. We'll be right back.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.